For this opportunity, and thank you for coming so early on this last day of the conference. I'll be talking about a health equity evaluation of a Canadian breast cancer screening program. This is a project that I'm collaborating on with Verna Mai from Cancer Care Ontario. Verna is the provincial overseer for cancer screening programs in the province, and Rick Glazer, a senior scientist at the Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences. This is the entity in Ontario that holds the health insurance claims for the Ontario Health Insurance Plan. I have no financial interests or commercial interests to disclose, and I'd like to start off by defining health inequities. I'd like to use the definition recorded in the World Health Organization documents that refers to health inequities as differences in health that are unnecessary, avoidable, unfair, and unjust. And I like this definition for two reasons. First, it implies that something can be done about health inequities. Second, it implies that something must be done. So when we think about interventions to improve health, we tend to think about two different strategies. The high-risk approach that targets interventions towards those with the highest prevalence of risk factors. The advantage of this approach is that we tend to see large effects in that high-risk population. The biggest disadvantage is that it has little benefit on population health because, as we know, those with highest risk contribute the least number of cases to prevalence of disease or incidence of disease. The other disadvantage with this approach is that if we use interventions that target individual behaviors, we may stigmatize populations. So in the 1980s, Jeffrey Rose proposed an alternative approach to intervention strategies that we've come to know as the population approach. And this strategy suggests that we direct interventions toward the largest segment of the population, those at moderate risk. So this slide shows the hypothetical distribution of risk in the population, and the intention of the population approach is to lower that mean risk effect in the population and therefore reduce the largest number of potential cases of disease. However, what often happens with population-based interventions is that in addition to lowering the mean risk in the population, the gap between the lowest levels of risk and the highest level of risk get wider. So we actually exacerbate inequities. I'm not making this up. There's examples in the literature of where this has happened. The best example is with tobacco control policies in the UK and the US, where we've seen policy changes that have lowered prevalence of smoking in the population, but the gap by socioeconomic status has grown wider. A national breast cancer screening program implemented in Belgium is an example of how this can happen with cancer control programs. Within 3 years of implementing this program, mammography use increased by 15 percentage points. That's great. That's exactly what we want to see. However, the negative gradient in prevalence of mammography use steepened by education level. So, coming from the US to Toronto, I was curious of whether there were health equity gradients in their Ontario breast cancer screening program. As we know, Canada has a universal access to health insurance, and they also have three cancer screening programs for breast, cervical, and colorectal cancer. So, the advantage of having that data source available to me and knowing that this examples have happened in the literature, I was interested in doing a health equity evaluation. There was one study that provided some preliminary evidence of variation in mammography use by socioeconomic and immigration status. And that study was conducted by my colleague, Rick Glazer, and was published in the Journal of General Internal Medicine. What we see here is a map of the city of Toronto. The darkest spots on the map indicate the areas of least advantage, where there's high concentrations of low-income population and populations of high immigration. The lightest sections on the map indicate the most advantaged areas where there's high concentrations of high-income individuals and low immigration. And the circles represent prevalence of mammography use. And what we see on this map is that the smaller circles indicating low use of mammography tend to be overlaid in the darkest areas. So there, as I said, this suggests that there is variation in mammography use by socioeconomic status. What this map doesn't tell us is about program participation. If we have universal access to health insurance, if we have these programs in place, who's participating and who's benefiting? So Cancer Care Ontario, the Institute of Clinical Evaluative Sciences, and my Center for Research on Inner City Health are now collaborating on an equity evaluation to inform this question. So our goal in this study was to identify the population of women in Ontario who would be eligible for the Ontario Breast Cancer Screening Program. And fortunately, due to the Universal Health Insurance Plan and access to data through the Ontario Health Insurance Plan, I'll call OHIP, we were able to identify all female registrants. And this is an excellent source for identifying the eligible population because 95% of health insurance claims are processed through OHIP. And when you look at data on prevalence of primary care use, about 97% of the population in Ontario have access to primary care provider in the past 2 years. So this is an excellent source for identifying the eligible population. So we limited age to women 50 to 66 to correspond with the criteria for program eligibility. We wanted to ensure that women were eligible through the entire study period, so we looked at those continuously enrolled who were alive, and we excluded women with a diagnosis of breast cancer given that their screening behavior would be very different from women of average risk. Next, we for each woman, we identified an index event, which we defined as a mammogram within a 2-year period. And then we looked at where that index event occurred. And we categorized women in study groups based on where the location of the mammogram. So for women who had a mammogram through the Ontario Breast Cancer Screening Program, they were put in the OBSP group. Women who had a mammogram through the Ontario Health Insurance Plan, they were categorized in the OHIP group. And then we had a separate category for women who did not complete mammograms. And our equity indicators for this study were based on secondary data. We looked at proxy for immigration status, which has been validated through the Ontario Census. And Rick has used this measure in his manuscript that I talked about earlier. And the definition is registration in the Ontario Health Insurance Plan within 10 years prior to the index date. We looked at area level income by geographic areas with about 400 residents in each area. And we also looked at local health integration networks. These are health planning areas in Ontario that are geographically based, and there are 14 of them in the province. So what did we find? First, there were over 1 million women identified in our sample. And of those, 40% did not have a mammogram during the index period. 31% were completed a mammogram through OHIP, and 29% completed a mammogram through the program. And these distributions are pretty much what we expected given the numbers that we had seen in earlier reports. What we hadn't been able to evaluate from earlier reports was the equity distribution and participation in the program. And here what we see is that there are equity gradients in overall mammography use for the province of Ontario. And the equity gradient for participation in the OHIP study group is slightly wider than in the OBSP study group. So this suggests that, you know, perhaps the OBS study group is doing a better job reaching women in lower income neighborhoods than the usual care group. We also saw equity gradients by immigration status with a greater gap in the equity access in the OBSP group. And we saw variation in program participation by the local health integration networks, ranging from 50% to 17% in the local health areas for the OBSP group, and 39% to 15% for the OHIP group. So these equity gradients got us thinking about, well, it seems that the program's not really reaching the women that we would want them to reach, those who are most vulnerable in the population. So we looked at rescreening rates to see if the program made a difference, because the program offers annual reminders, actually it's reminders every 2 years to complete screening. They provide written results of mammograms to women. They provide assistance with follow-up after abnormal test results. You would think that those enhanced services would encourage rescreening for the program participants. And indeed, what we saw is that after the 24-month period when hypothetically reminders are sent out to the program participants, the program did substantially better with rescreening than the OHIP study group that doesn't receive any organized follow-up. What was interesting, though, is that the OHIP study group had comparably high rates of rescreening when you look at the studies that have been done in the U.S. So we were intrigued by that finding. Looking at equity gradients by rescreening rates, we saw mixed results that the equity gradient in rescreening rates for area income quintiles was more narrow for the OBSP group. We saw similar equity gradients in immigration status with rescreening rates for both groups. And the local health integration network stratification showed that the OBSP group had a substantially wider equity gradient with rescreening rates. So key findings of this study were that in this province, where there is universal access to health insurance, there is universal access to a cancer screening program, those with the least resources are not taking advantage of the services. We also see that their rescreening rates are lower than higher income, more advantaged women who are taking advantage of the program. So where do we go from here? My key message in this presentation is I think we need to be very cautious when we think that universal access to health insurance or universal access to health programs is the panacea for eliminating disparities. We still need to focus our resources on those populations who receive or experience multiple barriers to program use and really need additional supports if we want them to take part in the benefits that the majority of us are experiencing. Next steps are for us to get in touch with those communities that have the lowest cancer screening rates. I like the idea or the suggestion that it takes a village to deliver a cancer screening program. So we're going out to Peel region of Ontario to talk with residents, to talk with non-clinical community service groups, to talk with primary care providers and public health agencies about what they think the barriers are to these participation in mammography use and this program, and what they think the solutions should be. And what's great about this project is Cancer Care Ontario is on board, and they have the resources and the directive from the Minister of Health to really make sure that the program is accessible to all residents in the area. So I will end on that note, and thank you for your attention. Sorry, my voice is breaking up. Thanks.
So the first question is for Dr. Valdez. For those of you who couldn't hear, the question was about the location of the kiosks.
Thank you for the question. I couldn't work that into my presentation. We set out to find an intervention that would work in a clinical setting to improve or enhance preventive practice. We work with federally qualified health centers who are under-resourced and don't have a lot of time or pay a lot of attention to prevention. So that's the intent. The second part of the question was about We didn't. We used a surrogate of a combination of education and income to give us an idea. The slide, I went through it so fast, but the vast majority of our participants had less than a seventh grade education, so very low literacy. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. We were encouraged to use telenovela kind of formats, and we don't do that. I mean, we present real stories that we heard. We are grounded in the work of Paulo Freire, where the idea is to, I'm getting some puzzled looks, but the concept is to, you empower individuals by helping them understand their own reality, objectivize the reality, and then how they can be actors in that. Anyway, it's kind of more theoretical, conceptual, really. But that's the idea. We found that people wanted to hear stories, real people like themselves that they could relate to. So the man, you know, whose wife had died, I mean, God, that, you know, we tested all these messages, and it was just really impactful to people. My biostatistician thought it was too dramatic, and I said, well, my dear, our audience is not you. You're a PhD. You know, you work at a cancer center. You don't need that. But people that don't get screened, you know, can benefit from seeing that. So, I'm actually very pleased that our results exceeded the you know, the 50% recommendation. Thank you for the question.
Any other questions for our presenters? Go ahead.
I mentioned that we were starting to do some work with the community with the lowest cancer screening rates. It's actually the region of Peel. They have a population of just over 1 million, and the population has increased by about 40% in the past 10 years. Sound familiar? The majority of those new immigrants are South Asian. South Asian is a huge group. You're talking about people from Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, India, very diverse, and not always, you know, there's conflicts among those groups in their home countries. So, you know, what's interesting is that we know that the cancer screening rates are low in that area. They're lowest among women of South Asian, from South Asian countries. We also know that among that population, the South Asian group tends to not experience an uptake in cancer screening after they've been in the country for an extended period. So like other groups, we see that after, you know, 10 years in the country, there's an increased use of Western medicine and cancer screening. We don't see it in this group. So hopefully, the work that we're doing with concept mapping and going into this community with the assistance of Punjabi Community Health Services that will provide some community health workers to do outreach with us, will provide translation and allow us to gather information from that community to understand enough about the differences within that group and help us generalize what we can do to create a cancer screening program that would address some of the barriers that we're seeing to cancer screening. However, I have to be realistic. You know, I think cancer screening is a choice. I think we should all, I mean, it clearly it saves lives. But I also realize that some people may refuse cancer screening, but it's important to understand whether the low rates that we're seeing are about individuals deciding not to follow through with cancer screening, or if it's an issue of limited knowledge, limited access, and so forth. So did that address your question? Great. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead, in the back.
Question for Dr. Paul. We saw the screenshots, we didn't see the videos. I was wondering if or how you addressed the literacy or translation issues in some of those YouTube videos.
Sure, sorry about that. My experience at when at these big conferences is not knowing what technology is available. You know, it's exactly so. So I invite you. I could share the actual website. You know, our NCI YouTube page. The I believe you're asking about the translation or
in
literacy. So the literacy. I mean, I don't know how to address this. I mean, it's mainly. If you look at, these are more public service announcements, so in terms of what level, you know, the language, we don't use, you know, complex medical terms, we use plain language principles in these. I'm trying to think what the grade level would probably be in terms of that, but I think probably around the sixth grade level, but we take into those factors into account. We use, you know, the NIH has the plain language, you know, plainlanguage.gov. We use those principles into our videos as well in the other formats. But we also make the videos, you know, 508 compliant as well, and putting, you know, closed captioning as well on that for both English and Spanish. So. But again, I invite you to, you know, take a look at those at, you know, our YouTube site, and any questions, please, you know, that email address ncimulticultural@mail.nih.gov. Be sure to help you with that. Thank you.
I'm going to ask a related question here to that. I was also curious about that. I respect those scientists very much who are participating in the YouTube channel, but I was wondering if anyone had done sort of a content analysis of the literacy level or even the reading grade level of the language and such of those messages, because those are very powerful messengers, regardless of whether people know their scientific background or not.
With that in mind, the content is developed in our office, in the Office of Communication and Education. Let me clarify that. These are spokespeople for us. We develop the content. You know, we are the interface with the public, and, you know, from our publications to our cancer.gov site to our interactions to, you know, 1-800 for cancer, and, you know, so we always take into account that piece. So that's why, you know, when I was talking about the plain language principles and so forth, that, you know, where we draft that, you know, we use data that's generated from our surveillance epidemiology and results team, but we don't use a complex, you know, like, oh, the odds ratio of this, and so you're at high risk, and, you know, especially, you know, in this confidence interval. No, we don't use that. We use clear, you know, simple terms. We use these because, you know, in many of the communities, there's a resonance with experts, especially, you know, and
look like that.
Exactly. So concordancy with that piece, and so they serve as an expert, a leader in the field, on one, you know, on the medicine or science side, but also a member of the community that they're trying to outreach to. So that's what that is. Sorry, I didn't clarify that piece.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, another question back here.
I also have a question for Ms. Maybe you said this and I'm not awake yet, but can you explain a little bit about what Access to Watch is?
Sure. Oh, sure.
Is it a Medicaid provider?
It's a great question, and I didn't say it, so in the interest of brevity. Access to Page is not a Medicaid provider. We're actually an access project that's focused on providing healthcare access for individuals who don't qualify for Medicaid, Medicare, state-sponsored benefits, VA, college insurance, et cetera. And so in our community, just like we are having these shifting demographics and SES characteristics, we're also having growing rates of the uninsured, compounded, of course, by the economic downturn like everyone else. And so our program was formed about 2001, really started seeking patients in 2002, and brought together all 7 hospitals in our community, so every hospital in DuPage County, as well as most of the major medical groups, and many of the other interested parties, working off of the idea of a fair share principle, where if everyone provided some resources to address a problem, given the assets of our community, this is not a medically underserved community. We have great density of physicians because we have a community that historically has the means and the insurance to fund their care. So that also means, though, that we have the assets to do something that perhaps uniquely other communities could not do. And access to PAGES, like I said, provides care annually to about 16,000 patients, but it's a rolling admissions process. At any one time, there are about 12,000 enrollees. Yeah. Great question. We're documentation blind. We don't actually ask the question. They need to be able to demonstrate that they live here in our community, but how they came to be in our community is irrelevant to us. The way that our primary source of enrollment is actually the collaboration with the health department and their breast and cervical cancer screening program. So once a patient has that initial screening, they are referred to us, and in fact the navigators staff all of those clinics and screenings so that they can communicate to patients and educate them about what the project is in the event that they should subsequently all come back to them with an invitation to participate. But we don't limit our enrollment only to those folks that were initially screened through the breast and cervical cancer screening program. Our partners at our FQHCs, our partners at different Access to PAGE sites, when a patient receives, because part of the Access to PAGE program is access to mammography and oftentimes pap smears and women's screening exams in their primary care offices and at the local hospitals. Patients may ultimately have that initial abnormal finding and have it not be through the breast and cervical cancer program, but rather their organic medical home. And when that happens, because our program Access to PAGE accepts all of the referrals for specialty care, that means that the request to see a gynecologist or a breast specialist comes to us, and we can then link the patients up and again invite them to participate in navigation. Patients decline to participate in navigation, that in no way hinders their access to the other resources that are available in terms of treatment. It's just an adjunct. The short answer is yes, with a few exclusions. If someone has had, if it's a secondary, if they had primary cancer of the same site in the past, they are not eligible for participation in this study, because these are for folks that had not previously been diagnosed or treated. Additionally, there is a time variable. So if someone came to us many, many, many months after initial diagnosis, I mean, part of our goal in being so aggressive in reaching out to the community is making sure that we're finding those folks as quickly as possible. But if someone, you know, because our goal is to measure that timetable, we need to be able to control the variables of at what point we intervene. And so those folks, for some of them, would not be eligible for participation in the study. On a case-by-case basis, we have still made the decision to navigate them if we thought that they would benefit from that intervention. At the end of the day, we're a community program. So while we're very invested in the success of the research, we're also equally invested in the success of our patients. So we don't really make that trade very well. Yeah?
Also, they've been navigated for anything else ever in the past.
Thank you. So if they had a prior history of navigation for another health program, we don't have a lot of navigation programs in DuPage County, but certainly it's possible that patients could have come from another community or within our community and had prior navigation experience that would confound the success of the intervention. Thank you.
Any last questions? Well, please join me again in thanking our wonderful presenters this morning and sharing their important work.
Thank you.